However, Davis Thayer is an empty building.
Yes.
Do you know of any plans for that empty building? So there, okay.
So currently, and yeah, when the when the schools closed it.
Now, that kind of, in my mind, and I apologize, I'm jumping all around. But that's the way my mind doesn't work properly. You and I, when we spoke the other day, you had brought up something that people may or may not be aware of going forward in November on the ballot, meaning the underwrite.
Yeah, there's rumors of an underwrite petition being put forward. I actually haven't seen or been able to confirm that it actually happens. I'm not sure of the timing. In concept, it is a real thing.
Mm-hmm.
There's an initiative petition, X number of valid signatures of registered voters can put forward an underwrite, which effectively would undo a specific amount, depending upon what they put forward, to reduce your taxes by that amount.
Okay.
So theoretically, they could be putting the petition together to undo the $6.8 million that we're putting forward on June 11th. That's a possibility. If they did it in the November ballot, obviously that is, at least from a historical perspective, we're going to get 80% of our population, registered voters, to turn out.
In November. Yeah.
Versus we might get 40% at an override based on historical perspective.
If we're lucky. Yeah.
General rule, 20% for a town election, 40% for either a school building or an override, 60% for the state election, 80% as a general rule for a presidential election. So in the presidential election, we know our news, advertising, I mean, we're going to get bombarded with all the political ads.
Right.
Is the message going to be able to get filtered through that mess, if you will? That says, oh, by the way, consider if the underwrite truly is on there, what that means to your town's operation.
Oh, correct.
Right?
Yeah.
We're going to have the opportunity that more people are going to be there, but are we going to be able to get the message through in amongst everything else that's going on in November?
Well, if you kind of project what's happening these days, ratcheted up a hundredfold just in the presidential side of it,
mm-hmm.
everything's, I would think, stands a chance of getting lost.
Right.
You know, and people walking in because they're so committed one way or the other for the presidential. But, you know, we get a ballot that quite often is two-sided.
You may skip.
Yeah, and you may look down and like, wait, what is that? And mm-hmm. what does that mean?
Right.
And as good a job as they try to do with a written explanation of it, I don't think most people, first of all, I don't think spend the time to read all the way through it. They may quickly glance or they may not understand it.
Mm-hmm.
So theoretically, if this were to happen, we pass it in June. 5 months later, we pass to erase what happened in June, theoretically, potentially. What would that, I can't even imagine what that would mean, how it would impact,
yeah.
and what people would do and react mm-hmm. to it.
It'd be interesting because I think, as I read it, and again, I haven't confirmed this, we haven't gone down that slippery slope. Heaven forbid.
Right.
But I do know that in the earlier discussion, certainly around June versus November for the override side of it, in June, it made sense from a school perspective to do it now because June 15th is the contractual date that the teachers who were going to be losing their jobs would need to get notified by.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Right. So having it the 11th, at least they'll know, notify yes or notify no on June 15th. So at least the schools can do their planning during the summer which, oh, by the way, also as part of the redistricting, Lucas has been on record, Mr. G is on record to say, I need two summers to plan for it.
Right.
This is one of them.
Right.
So he's got a choice, hopefully, of proceeding as planned with the override so that he doesn't have to lay off teachers, things to go, and they can focus on the redistricting, as opposed to if the override fails, they've got to cut teachers, and now they've got to rejigger to deliver in September what they can.
Right. And they've got to determine what they can.
So if it passes and then the underride happens and is successful, so the two big ifs, then that's November or whatever. The tax rate hearing would be a couple of weeks later. So the town would be obligated to reduce the taxes because of the underride.
Underride, yeah.
And thereby, we don't have that money that the teachers who are now working from September through November, they're going to get notified in November or December time, some time frame. And if somebody has a class with a teacher, there's going to be mass disruption in the schools.
So there could be, you're a teacher, you're told the override passes June 11th.
Mm-hmm.
On the 15th, you open up your check or however they do it these days, there's no pink slip.
Right.
You're good to go. You're back next year. You could start planning.
Right.
Whatever. Theoretically, again, the first Tuesday in November, the underride passes, and a week or two later, you all of a sudden get this pink slip, and thank you for everything you've done, Mr. Sherlock. We're going to lay you off between Thanksgiving and Christmas.
Yep. And what's that going to do?
And then what does that do to the classes?
What does that do to the education for the students? Absolutely.
First of all, you know, granted, we have, if you will, you take history at the high school. You have multiple history teachers.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now those teachers are going to have to take on classes that they don't normally teach, and their class size is going to
potentially change.
Yeah, and go, it potentially could go way up. It could go from 25 to 35. Right.
Realistically, I think, so that's assuming X number of teachers were getting cut at the high school, you would have to keep the core classrooms, English, social studies, etc. It would be electives that would go.
Correct.
Right? So, yeah, you may still have a teacher who is either getting more or less, or those classes, from a student perspective, that class just disappears.
Right, right. Well, and then how do you explain that? Yeah. And how do you explain that to a student who is taking X course, and the reason they're taking it is they think they want to go in a certain direction in their life to college, and then all of a sudden that course midstream no longer exists.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's potentially very scary.
Yes.
But if the override isn't passed, then that becomes a non-issue. So say the override passes. When will residents see an actual increase in their taxes?
Okay.
It obviously won't be the next day.
No. So the tax year and our invoices are quarterly.
Yeah.
The fiscal year runs July 1 through June 30.
Okay, right? Yeah.
So the first two tax bills in the next year, which is FY25, which is the override, they're always an estimate.
Right.
Of what the tax rate would be.
Right.
They're effectively based upon last year tax rate, and they just re-estimate, right? So the first two are going to be effectively similar to what we're paying these last two.
And so then, that would be July 1 and October 1.
Correct. And then after the tax rate is set in the November, December, then the second two, the third quarter and fourth quarter, would be the tax increase that would be seen in that January and April time frame.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. And that's where I know, even in conversations at the senior center, people are saying, well, my tax bill in second quarter was this, my tax bill went in this was this. That's more than 2.5%. Well, yeah, you can't count it that way.
Right.
I totally agree. You can't count it that way. You have to look at the four.
Yeah.
And over the four, that will be the 2.5% over the prior year. And in this case, if we do pass the override, it would be the 6.8 million plus the 2.5 over the prior year. So it's going to be hard to calculate. It's going to be a big jump, that first one, if it does pass.
And what if it passes? They prepare all these new bills for January 1.
Yep.
And then the underwrite.
Well, they would be preparing them. They would have to undo those preparations if the underwrite succeeded, because they would only be setting the tax rate after the underwrite succeeds.
Correct.
Right. So, yeah.
And then that could throw a whole monkey wrench into whether or not we get our streets plowed. You know, if we have a winter where we get snow again. Wow.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. Another thing, and I've mentioned this to you in the past, you can't drive around the town of Franklin or the city of Franklin, whatever you feel like calling it, without seeing cleared property and apartment buildings starting to go up.
Mm-hmm.
We had talked, you and I, about the Taj just getting their... It's not a certificate of occupancy but basically that's what it is.
Yeah.
What? First of all, I guess I know, and I'm one of them, wondering where the money from these apartments are going. You started explaining it to me, and I don't think people realize that there's different taxes for different statuses where the building of that apartment building is. Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, so effectively during the building process, before it is fully functional, i.e. occupied, and then from a business perspective, actually generating revenue, then that's when the assessors get involved in terms of assessing the value of the commercial operation, right? So that building is 104 apartments, so the building owner is going to be assessed at that level, as opposed to if it was 104 condos, and each individual condo owner would then have, you know, their portion of a tax, similar to a single family homeowner.
Right, right. Right.
All of that revenue drops into the general fund and then becomes part of the town revenue that is divvied out to town function, school, line item.
Yeah.
And then provides the services accordingly.
So right now, and let's go back a couple of weeks, because we think the Taj is starting to rent.
Based upon what I've seen, there are people occupants.
It looks that way.
Yeah, yeah.
But let's say it's before they're renting. That's great to know, because I don't think, I didn't realize that. I always assumed there was some kind of revenue.
Now, there's a related piece, and I heard it through one of the other conversations we were having, so it'd be beneficial here. There's a thing called a TIF, a tax incremental financing. So a business can relocate here. Cold Chain Technology, Tegra Medical, and there's at least two others, names escape me at the moment, but they have come in over the years and they applied for and got a tax increment financing. So they have a building, call it 500,000 for common numbers that we're talking through, and they're proposing that when they come here, they're gonna double the value of it and expand their operations. So they would pay the regular tax on the 500,000, and the tax incremental financing would be on the expansion. In this verbal case, it would be on the other 500,000.
Yeah.
And it would be over graduated usually over 10 years. So they pay like 10% and then 20, then 30. So that while they're moving in and then setting up, you know, they're paying more, but they're not paying the full piece until sometime down the road, gives them a case to really get up and operating.
Right.
In all four cases, I think of the four that have operated, they not only are here, they've also expanded their operations without an additional tax incremental fund. They've done what they've supposed to do. We're benefiting, and they're continuing to expand, and we're getting revenue from those expansions.
Okay.
So that's... It's a nice incentive. It's not heavily utilized, but it can be utilized in those cases.
If if people are aware of it and they're, you know, and I think part of that is probably incumbent on people in the town.
Well, it's the nature of the business, too. So if you're going into a building and you're just going to use it as is, no real retrofit, et cetera, there's no real advantage in my mind. I'm sure tax expert may differ, but that's fine. That's why they do it a tax expert. But if you're coming in and really adding, you know, in the Tegra Medical case or the cold chain, they're bringing in technology, bringing in other stuff. It's going to be rather expensive. They're increasing the value of that building in order for them to do their operation. Then it would kind of make sense that some of that increase, they would not have to pay as much tax on until they're, you know, sometime down the road when they're more fully able to do so.
Okay.
That's a win-win.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one key part is override passes. Mm-hmm. Schools get 6.3,
yep. From the override.
Yes, and it's not a one-time thing. They will get for X number of years. Did you say 4 years?
Well, at least in terms of the pledge document that two of the three parties have agreed to so far. Schools get 6.3 in the first year, and then it's 4 point something, 4 point something, 4 point something for the succeeding years.
So, because one of the thoughts out there that I've heard is that it's a one-year thing. So they'll get the 6.3 and then nothing else.
Yeah, it's a one-time increase in the overall levy.
Yeah.
They get the entire piece, but then next year they'll get, instead of getting the 6.3, all of it, they'll get 4 something. The town will get the other 2 something.
Okay. We talked about, obviously, the apartment buildings. We talked a little bit about it. Maybe this may affect finances going forward. And it's, we talked about the redistricting, and then I quickly realized it's a whole separate issue, and people really need to separate. I don't want to muddy what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. However, Davis Thayer is an empty building.
Yes.
Do you know of any plans for that empty building? So,
So currently, and when the school closed it, they spent the next year or so, you know, emptying it out of all redeemable school materials, etc. And then the school had to take a legal action to determine it as excess surplus to what they needed. And the town took title to it. So it is owned fully and totally by the town. The town put together the Davis Thayer Advisory Committee. So it's a subcommittee of councilors and some citizens, I believe, that are part of it. They met several times and then ultimately said, the town, let's do an expression of interest. So it's a piece of what is called kind of an RFP, or request for formal proposal.
Yeah.
So an expression of interest is just a formal way of saying, hey, greater commercial, industrial, whatever, anybody out there, how would you like to use this? Tell us in some formal manner.
Okay.
So that expression of interest is due May 31 this year, so in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And then once those are received, the committee, which had suspended meetings, will meet, review, and who knows, there may be two, there may be two dozen expressions. The committee will then review those in maybe one meeting, maybe two meetings, depends. And then ultimately they're charged with giving a recommendation to the town council as to what the next step should be.
Okay.
So it may be that there's, you know, a couple of really viable alternatives in that expression, and then it may lead to, okay, these two sound really good, let's craft an RFP to actually get into the sale, but make sure that they put into it so it's truly a good deal and we know what we're going to get.
Right.
So it becomes the market piece of that, etc.
Okay.
That's one way it could go. There may be nothing in there, and then the town's just going to sit with it, doing minimal maintenance. I know in the terms of, I think it was the planning board, current planning board chair said, worst case, we just keep it. We know the value of the land will continue to grow.
Yes.
Because of its location. And at some point in time, it'll be more valuable to us for whatever the opportunity is. Right now, we don't know what we can do with it.
Right.
Without spending a boatload of money, and oh, by the way, we don't have that boatload of money.
Right. Going back, I forget what the building was actually called, but the rec department was in there. The one where Pizzoni's is now, and I think...
That was the old municipal building. It was originally a Horace Mann.
Yes, yes.
It was a middle school and then a high school, or high school and middle school. Or it was certainly before our time.
It certainly was. And I remember going for rec committee meetings with Ryan Jetty.
Yes.
In that building.
Yep.
And that was interesting, to say the least.
Yes.
But it was... You know, eventually they took care of it. They mm-hmm. did what they had to do.
Right.
We don't want to necessarily get into the redistricting thing because that's such a different
It's a different
piece.
Animal, and respectfully, the people, and as I've said before, I'll just reiterate as we kind of close off this section on the
yeah.
redistricting, there was a plan for a plan.
Right.
And the plan has now been agreed to. Granted, it was a 5-2 vote, but that's the plan to go forward. Now there'll be additional work. There was always acknowledged there's a whole lot of other questions that need to be decided.
Yes.
Exactly where the lines are going to get drawn to make the north and make the south. Exactly where the lines are going to get drawn so we'll be able to do those calculations in terms of how many students are really going to get, quote, the free busing versus the pay busing,
right.
et cetera.
Right.
All of those decisions.
Little details.
Details.
Yeah.
So in the last school committee meeting, they've actually started showing this is the implementation guideline. We want to determine where the students and the administration are going to be.
Yeah.
Right? Who's going to be the principals in the new places?
Right.
And then bring them and their team together to help make some of the rest of the decisions, which makes sense. They're going to be living there. They're going to be administering the school.
Mm-hmm.
Let them get involved in the decisions. And then a lot of the parents who now know, oh, I'm going to be going to that. All right, my Johnny's going this one. My Susan's going this one. Get them involved on the other committees that'll do the implementation work, whether it's busing, how
right,
they're going to do
right.
PCCs, all of that. There's a boatload of work to be done, but it's going to take a coordinated effort between town, school, potentially some additional architects, et cetera, to determine from outside, clearly, the existing schools. One half is an elementary school, so you're going to have elementary-type bathrooms.
Exactly.
Right? Now
yeah.
you're putting the entire thing in elementary, so a K-2 will fit in the elementary side fairly
easily.
Do
you have to change or retrofit the middle school side of it?
You may. I mean, so you got a 3-5th grader. How much of a size difference do you
yeah.
need to make for, you know, kind of the male urinal? It's not going to be a significant difference.
Yeah. Right.
Right? Bathrooms are bathrooms. Now, it may be that each of them had, call it 5 kindergarten classrooms. They may get 8.
Yeah.
Right? So 5 will have the kindergarten structure with the bathroom in the room.
Right.
The others would get added at some point in time so that they would be all equitable and functional in the way they're supposed to be.
But, yeah.
but oh, by the way, there are kindergarten bathrooms today in the district that don't have, excuse me, there are kindergarten rooms in the district today that don't have bathrooms in the room.
Right, right.
So we already have some inequity today that people may or may not be aware of.
Right. Redistricting is not contingent on, in won't necessarily be impacted on whether or not the override passes or fails.
It'll only be impacted in terms of the resources and specific resources available to continue to do the redistricting effort.
Correct.
From a financial perspective.
So no. Override passes, schools getting 6.3.
Yep.
Override fails, schools not getting 6.3. Redistricting, still a discussion. Without the additional funding may have to be the plan, not may, you would have to think, would have to be altered in some respects.
I think the timeline of it would be more important to continue to deliver because there will be efficiencies, especially financial, in going forward with less buildings.
Because, yes, you're going to save theoretically save money.
Right. Now, some of the savings actually is on the town budget side because, oh, by the way, we talked, they've got facilities, they've got custodians, they've got the DPWs, so they have to do less plowing for two schools, less et cetera for two schools. It's not necessarily a school budget piece, but there is an MOU between them. There will be some efficiencies that the teachers who remain will at least know and can better effectively deliver to appropriate class sizes what they can, as opposed to if you had five elementaries, which is what we have today.
Yeah.
Right? Now you've got some inconsistency. So somebody's dealing with a second grade class of 24, somebody next door is 16.
Right, right.
Now you've consolidated them, so you can have better capability for the North and the South to more equitably deliver, whether it's 18, 18, 18, or 19, 19, 19, as opposed to 16 and 24, that, you know, you couldn't do because you didn't have the staff to add there because you didn't have the budget to give that additional space.
Okay, that makes sense. Just a way outside question, but I know it's come up. The possibility or plan for a new police station,
yes,
is tied to redistricting and not tied to the override. Am I correct or incorrect?
It's tied only to the extent that in the pledge doc, the memorandum, it does reference that the town potentially has desires to reuse the Parmenter space.
Yeah.
In the redistricting plan, the schools have determined that Kennedy, because it's the newer of the two schools, would continue to have some use, and Parmenter would, at this point, be undetermined use. So there would still be, similar to Davis Thayer, they would empty part of the redistrict, take whatever they need from a school perspective, and then at some point in time determine to legally potentially declare it surplus and then deed it over to the town. At that point in town would have control of that school and land. Prior to that...
So we're not talking a new police station in a year.
The new police station, even in the most recent meeting, Monday, they met, first time in the committee this year, I think, did three interviews back to back to back with who would be the owner project manager.
Yeah.
So the three firms, they whittled them down to one. Now the town administrator is going to negotiate and hopefully come up with the contract with the number one choice. If that doesn't work out, they'll go to the number two choice. But that effectively starts the timeline because then the owner project manager gets into the architect, gets into the design, gets into the site location, right? So all of those things have not yet been determined. It's probably going to be a 5 to 8 year
I would think so,
plan. Yeah. To do that, and oh, by the way, there will likely be another debt exclusion similar to an override, except an override is forever.
Yeah.
So once you raise it, it's forever, unless an underwrite happens. But a debt exclusion is tied to a facility, and it's for term.
Okay.
So the town generally has gone 20, Tri-County is doing 30, something in that ballpark. The taxes would go up for that period of time, and then it's hard to say they disappear because the tax increases are still happening.
Right. Yeah.
Those line items in the finance chart do drop off because over time you're paying, and you've seen it on your mortgage, you pay X amount principal and then interest, the principal piece gradually disappears and you're still paying interest. Then at the end, you're done. That happens on a debt exclusion as well. And if I recall, in a couple of years, the only thing left from a school building on our tax rolls will be the bonds for the high school.
Okay.
Because the Keller Sullivan, et cetera, will have dropped off.
Okay. The current police station, do you remember when that was built?
I think I heard it was in the 70s.
Really? That old? I didn't think it was that old, but I have no idea.
The biggest issue with that is... I know, and it was referenced even in the most recent meeting, it was in my interview with Jeff Nutting. And when he got into administration, I think it was 2001. In 2001, 2000, the police department was authorized for 54. Over time, they actually bottomed out, I think, at 44?
Something like that, yes.
They only got back to 54 in the last couple of years. right?
Yeah.
So they've maxed. The other piece is we've been fortunate through the diversity hiring. There are now, I think it's 7 females as part of the force. They don't have enough space.
A facility.
They don't have enough space for the female facility.
Would have never thought of that, which is a typical guy. But you're right.
Never mind, because it was built at a time, they actually even have a dock room.
Yeah.
In the facility. Who needs a dock room these days?
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
And some of the spaces are just very inadequate. I mean, apparently an office is a closet.
Yeah, right, right.
Right, so, yeah.
Yeah, no, I do think the way the town has grown, whether the police station is 25 or 50 years old, mm-hmm. it needs an updating. Because it's something you can't skimp on.
Yeah, and I expect, in terms of the use of that facility going forward, I would think that would get repurposed. It may get some retrofit to make it for whatever the new purpose. Clearly, you may not have a need for whatever the jail cells, and I haven't been in there, so I really don't know. But I also know...
Nor have I.
Well, I also know when you first walk in there, you've got this big glass with the dispatch center, et cetera. That's not exactly the most welcoming position to be in, et cetera, especially if we're going to use it in another public space.
Correct.
But one of the issues that clearly, because it's so close to the wetlands and to the pond, et cetera, you can't really expand it.
No.
And it really doesn't make a whole lot of sense because of the way it was structured to even go up. Because in order to go up, you'd have to disrupt the operations inside, and then where are they going to operate from?
Right.
And while
right.
you're doing the construction.
Right.
It's not like you can stop and say, well, you know, you can operate it out of a trailer or something. No.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you can't.
You can't.
It's not like we were able to do when we were working on this building. We could work out of a trailer. Police department cannot.
No. So I would expect, and again, future decision point at some point, but that might be another community type center.
You know,
an art center, cultural center of some sort. It's in a good spot. It's certainly centrally located. Not best spot for a police station.
But, totally get it. Whoever is listening to this, so they understand, at least me in asking you questions made a conscious decision to not go the redistricting route because it is two separate issues, the mm-hmm. override and the redistricting. There's some things that are kind of tied in.
Right.
But they are two separate issues. I'm sure there are people that, I know there are people that are saying the redistricting was put out there to muddy the water. We're not trying to do that. We're trying to inform an uninformed individual, me, about this override, what it means, what it doesn't mean, clear up a lot of the misconceptions, which I think we probably could go on for hours. There's so many of them, but my brain doesn't hold that much.
Well, we can certainly come back again, and we'll offer to the listeners, you know, our contact info will be in the show notes.
Yes.
If there's a question that we haven't covered either directly or indirectly and you still want some answer to, feel free to drop us a line. Let us know.
Absolutely. We'll do it again. We'll sit down and talk. If you have questions about the redistricting, we can address those. I'm not going to speak for Steve, but you do a tremendous job with everything you've done with Franklin Matters, everything you've brought to the TV station. We're better for it, both TV side and radio side. Mm-hmm. We've all learned a ton from you, but I think you're similar to me. You just enjoy doing it. People that know me know I never shut up. So I apologize if I commandeered Franklin Matters. It was not supposed to be Jade Matters. I also, when we spoke earlier, we both pretty quickly came to the idea that we should do this. And we arranged it. You know, we just talked about this, I think, 2 or 3, 4, 5 days ago.
Within the week.
So if, like you said, anybody that wants to get in touch with either one of us, we can do something like this fairly quickly. Mm-hmm. I have nothing to do with the tech part of it. Steve is able to turn these things around fairly quickly. If it were me, you wouldn't hear it for about 20 years. So. But thank you for letting me be a part of it.
Yeah, well, thank you for asking the questions, being willing to do so. It takes two to tango.
Yeah.
And while we didn't dance, we were dancing in the sphere of concepts. And some of those concepts are tough. So I appreciate your following along, because I was able to read that, okay, this is starting to make some sense, so we'll continue it this way. And if I started saying something and it wasn't making sense, then I had to change my approach, et cetera.
Right, right.
That's one of the glories, at least, of having these conversations, because one of the issues in the social world is, especially when you get a long thread, somebody's answering this question, it really was answered over there.
Right,
and
right.
It just is chaos. But
well, and no. I do think we're fortunate that you are very good at explaining all this stuff, but you can explain it in multiple different ways. Mm-hmm. So multiple different personality types, or it's not intellectual types, it's how we process it.
Mm-hmm.
People process information
sure.
different. You're very good at reading that and then going down that track.
Mm-hmm.
And so I appreciate you, as I said when we first talked about this, dumbing it down for someone like me. It certainly wasn't dumbed down, but it was put in a way. I know I can't even calculate how much more I know now than I did 2 hours ago. I could actually have somewhat of a conversation about it now.
Yep.
So I appreciate cool. you doing that, and you all the time you spend trying to inform and educate as many people as possible. We're lucky to have you.
Yeah, thank you. As long as I can continue to have fun doing this,
yeah.
can continue to do so, and people are still willing to listen and read and subscribe, et cetera, then, yeah, I'll continue to do so. Clearly, at some point, I want to get somebody to take over this place.
Right, right.
So if you're interested in wanting to write, I'll train.
Well, absolutely, because the more we have, the better we are, and more people with the information. It's a valuable service, and just for a little plug for your newsletter, is in my email box every morning, and that's how I find out what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's stuff that I don't read because it really doesn't resonate with me, but I try to read everything. And just that service alone, it doesn't cost a cent.
Nope.
You just have to hit a button and the thing starts showing up and you're able to find out information.
Right.
So thank you for that.
Yep. Thank you indeed. And for the listeners, thank you for listening. We'll be back if we have some more questions, including yours potentially to answer. And we do this, of course, because Franklin matters. We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. And by the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts at Franklin Matters.